Greetings and welcome to another Wandering One podcast brought to you by Wandering One Studios and yours truly, your host, Link Flores. I hope you're all having a wonderful day. Today is Tuesday, November 7th, 2023. And this episode will drop on Wednesday. So thank you all very much who have been supporting the podcast in any way, shape, or form. Sincerely appreciate it. You guys don't really understand like how much it really means to have you guys tuning in and sharing it and, you know, popping by, you know, to ask questions, drop comments, to rate it. It means a whole lot. Special shout out to all the Patreon supporters. A new episode should be dropping this month, actually within the next week or so. I want to try to make sure those go out on Saturdays twice a month. Not exactly sure how I'm going to be scheduling these, but if you're interested in joining the Patreon, please feel free to stop over to patreon.com/wanderingonestudios for simply $5 a month. Just $5. You get special access to two monthly-ish, issues. It's not a magazine, but sort of it's a periodical, I guess, right? Anyway, you get access to two special exclusive episodes for Patreon supporters only, wherein I will answer questions that you send in, which you can drop through Patreon. And I'll throw down advice if you ask for it. Maybe good advice, maybe bad advice, may just be really funny advice. But I'll also answer questions that you have for me, whether it's something you want to ask me personally, if you just want to get an opinion on something that's maybe not necessarily advice related. Maybe you've got a burning question among your friend group or your coworkers or family that you want to maybe have somebody drill in and throw a little bit of their own insights on. I'd be happy to do that for you. And you can do that through Patreon. Like I said, the link is patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. You're more than welcome to stop over there and check it out. It is free to look at. It's $5 per month to subscribe and get those two bonus episodes that won't appear anywhere else. So please feel free to do that if you have the ability. If you can't, don't worry about it. This podcast will still be available for free 99. One other thing, throw a little bit of shopkeeping here. You can also check me out if you can't get enough of me here on the podcast, and I don't blame you. No, all seriousness, you can check me out over on Twitch at twitch.tv/linkib. That's LINKIBE. And I do gaming content over there, chit chat with the community, and, you know, just generally have fun. Try to, you know, do the best I can to entertain over there by playing games and being silly and maybe not so great at them, but at least having fun. You can also stop by the Streamlabs store if you want to pick up some Wandering One Studios merch. There's a couple of shirts and other items that are available, such as water bottles, stickers. You have a couple hoodies. Just working on building up some more ideas for merchandise that's more podcast-themed and podcast-oriented. And also maybe finding a home for all of that that's not on Streamlabs. But if you're interested, streamlabs.com/linkib, just like the Twitch name, /merch. So that's streamlabs.com/linkib/merch. So thank you very much to everybody who's done anything at all, whatever it was, no matter how great or small. I appreciate you all. And I didn't actually mean for that to rhyme, but it came out that way. So we're just going to leave that in. I'm not going to edit that out. Thank you so much. Everything that you do really does support this podcast, supports this channel, and hopefully we'll go into making a better product overall for you guys to enjoy and share and feel good about supporting a small creator trying to make their way in the world. Since we started out talking about video gaming, one big topic that we talked about last podcast was Destiny 2, and more particularly Bungie laying off a brickload of employees in a very unceremonious manner. I think the first flash in the pan reaction was that it was Sony's doing. However, it turns out that this isn't the case. The management over at Bungie has decided to axe nearly 100 employees, and we've mentioned those names, some of those names before, including fan favorite composer Michael Salvatore, and also I think it's Peter Sekarist. They just got the axe. And it's got the Bungie community and the Destiny 2 community more particularly in an uproar. People are canceling pre-orders. People are just flat out not playing the game anymore. A lot of people have decided they're not going to even bother to spend any money in the Eververse store, which is Bungie's kind of, how do you put it? It's their cosmetics store. Like, you can purchase weapon skins, you can purchase armor sets. You can purchase vehicles and other little baubles and bits that kind of dress up your character, but don't have any appreciable effect necessarily on the gameplay itself. And I talked to my own community in Discord about this, and then I got lost for topics, and I posed this question on Facebook, and my wife actually popped in with a great pair of questions. So we're going to go ahead and put those down right now. First one was, what do you think are the viable options for misplaced Destiny players to start playing other games, or should they just go back and dig through their stack of shame? To answer that one right off rip, always go back to your sack of shame. Whenever your current game either starts failing you and you're losing interest, or the developer does something wackadoo that you don't appreciate, or the management does something incredibly horrible to 100 people and totally displaces and disenfranchises them and deprives them of their hard-earned benefits and stock options. Yeah, go back to your stack of shame. There's plenty of games that we all probably have in our backlog that we could take a little bit of extra time and focus on. And while I have grown to love Destiny over the years, I mean, I fell in love with it initially when it first launched, and I've kind of been a labor of love to continue playing it through the last couple of years in particular. I do understand that there are people out there who are very upset, very hurt, and feel betrayed, and also very angry with Bungie, and rightfully so. If you're looking for alternatives, there are probably any number of multiplayer looter shooter type games that are out there, and some of them have a slightly more condensed community than a multiplayer online game Destiny is. There's hundreds of thousands of people that are out there at play. Some of the other games will have slightly smaller communities and maybe not as expansive of a reach, but you can always go back to the old classics. Tom Clancy's The Division and The Division 2 are both excellent games to go back and play. They're wonderfully crafted. They do have a little bit of that tanky bullet sponge enemy thing where they're not really doing any particular strategies that you have to figure out, kind of like Destiny. They're mostly just bullet sponges, but it's fun. Jump in with, you know, a couple of people and just ruin the enemy's days. You can also join in on their multiplayer component. There are several different options that you can pick to, and choose from. And I would say give The Division and The Division 2 another look. If you're in with Tom Clancy, you don't mind Ubisoft at all, Ghost Recon Wildlands is also an incredibly viable option, still a solid game. And if you're able to purchase it, especially on a discount, since it is quite old at this point, there's a wealth of DLC content that's available. Excellent stuff. Very well crafted, very interesting stories, and you know it fleshes out the core game a little bit more. Also adds a little bit of replayability if you've currently beaten the campaign and you're just looking for something that's a little unique, a little bit different. Those I would recommend as well. Outside of that, one of the things I just recently picked up, which also does seem to have a pretty decent multiplayer component as long as you're playing with friends, is LEGO Star Wars The Skywalker Saga. I managed to get this on Game Pass for a scream of a song. The Galactic Edition is actually just under $30, and it's originally priced closer to $80. The bizarre thing about this is that the second premium tier, which is like the next step down, is actually way more expensive. It's almost twice as expensive, clocking in, I think, at about $49.99. Grab a sip of water here, but that one was really a lot of fun. I picked it up this weekend, started playing a little bit of it on stream yesterday on Monday, and was, again, it's LEGO. I mean, it's LEGO and it's Star Wars. They're going to put their full weight behind it. The environments look incredible. Some of the gameplay gets a little sticky occasionally, but mostly it's the same LEGO gameplay you've come to know and love with an extra layer of polish on it, especially in the open hub worlds. Haven't really gotten past Tatooine. Started out playing you're playing through the films, but in Legoized forms of them. So, you know, a lot of the more graphic things may be cut out, but it doesn't stop you from enjoying the gameplay. The variety of characters that you can unlock, and particularly if you purchase the Galactic Edition, a huge swath of characters are unlocked right from the start. Ordinarily, you probably wouldn't be able to play a character like Darth Maul in, you know, episode 4, since he's from episode 1 of the Star Wars saga. But yeah, I was able to access Darth Maul and use some of the Sith Force abilities and Darth Maul's unique abilities in the game, and it was really fun. It does add a huge level of replayability to the game as well, because it's a LEGO game. There's always a ton of things for you to collect, secrets to find, characters and ships to unlock, worlds to explore, side missions to do. If you're looking for something that's going to kind of scratch a little bit of that sci-fi itch, maybe be a little bit more of a casual playthrough, I would highly recommend LEGO Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, particularly if you can get it on sale like I did, the Galactic Edition, which has almost every single DLC they put out, if I recall correctly. And it's a scream at $30. It's almost worth borrowing $30 from somebody if you don't have it. It's such a great game, and you can play with friends. So if you have an Xbox, I would encourage you to get it there. I'm certain it's on other platforms. I just know the Xbox sale is a scream at this moment. Excuse me, I got a little bit of a sniffle here. Give me 1 second. And through the magic of pause, we're back. So yeah, sorry. Had a little bit of the sniffles there. Not because I have allergies or anything like that. I think it's just a little dry air. So we're letting the windows open up a little bit when they aren't actively building houses all around us. Second question. This is a good one. Personal position about what Bungie's next step should be is that they should shelve Marathon, which is the release that they were contracted through for Sony to build and to kind of teach Sony devs how to build a first-person shooter experience, which Sony's not necessarily known for, and to pull back all the developers that they fired to make the Final Shape the best, most polished DLC to date, or they're finished. What are your thoughts on that, and what is your opinion about what they should do to recover? That is a loaded question. I personally don't think that Bungie can. I don't think that they can recover from this. They really just Joe Exotic themselves, I think, right down the shitter. I don't think that they're really going to be able to recover from this. I think Sony's going to look at them going forward as a bad investment. And I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up putting Bungie back up on the market and go like, hey, somebody want to take this turd off our hands? This is a thing that Sony and Bungie have done to themselves once before by bouncing from Microsoft and then jumping into Sony's pocket. Bungie's kind of shown that they don't really have any kind of, well, not only that they need to have a platform loyalty, but they're just going to go where the money is. They've really proven that, especially with their cosmetic store and the amount of money they charge for various items that you can purchase through said store. It's an obscene amount of money for the cosmetics. And it's not like they wouldn't earn the money if they'd still price them maybe like 50% less than what they're currently doing. A lot of these things that you can purchase for what they call silver come in at like 3 to 5, even 2,000 silver. 100 silver, just for those of you who aren't aware, it comes out to $1 in real world money. So if you wanted a really cool look for a particular helmet, for example, that look could cost you anywhere from $3 to $8. It's a lot of money to put on a digital item that has no value outside of the game, except for making you look cool. You don't gain any extra experience. You don't have any extra abilities. It's just, this looks prettier than this. That's all it is. But I think if they were going to try to make this work, let me not be so fatalistic. Let's say that they're going to make a good run at trying to make it work. First of all, hiring the devs back, I think they've already shot themselves in the foot on that one. If they had fired me the way that they fired everybody else, just via email or letting somebody else tell them, hey, they fired all of us and you just happened to be part of the people who got fired, I wouldn't go back. So they're pretty much fried right now, I think, as far as the staff is concerned. They're going to have to really hustle overtime to keep whoever's remaining on with Bungie to stay there, because they've got to be looking at, well, so-and-so didn't do anything wrong. That was one of the most heartbreaking tweets that I read after the firing. Was one of the developers said, the worst part about this, I didn't do anything wrong. I worked my butt off. I gave everything that I had. I put in quality work. I never had bad reviews, and they just fired me. I think they've burned a lot of bridges there, and also a lot of inroads. While a lot of people would want to work in the gaming industry, I'd be very surprised to find somebody who was willing to put their entire career and their livelihood on the line to sign on with Bungie at this point. I think they've shot themselves quite squarely in both feet. And I think at this point, it's time to cut and run. drop all the prices of your cosmetics. You know, at the very least, you should drop them by 25-30% so that people feel like they want to still put money into the ecosystem. You're going to have to be Johnny on the spot with updates, patches, hot fixes, and everything to keep the game functioning. You definitely need to fire at least one or two people in your, you know, management core who pulled this decision out of their asses. Knowing that the game was losing money, knowing that they had developed a very rushed, haphazard, and disjointed last couple of expansions, most particularly the Lightfall expansion, they need to chop a couple of heads from the top, take their salaries, pay them down to the people below, and then turn that into also putting money into servers. An online game that still has servers that are this buggy, this broken, and this sketchy is, it's inexcusable. There's really no reason for it. They cut their teeth on making some of the most polished multiplayer shooters out there, particularly Halo, and also Destiny 1 into the beginning of Destiny 2. Why are server issues still a problem for you guys? So many other studios have figured out how to do this, and you still can't. Even Activision, as money-hungry and as broken as they have been over the years, have figured this out. I guess when they walked away, they took their servers with them, and they left Bungie with whatever they had in their actual offices. So I don't know, but I think that right now, like, yeah, they're going to have to drop prices. They're going to have to fire a couple of heads, whoever came up with this cockamamie decision to just lay off a bunch of quality people. They're going to have to throw that money back into investing in the people who are there to convince them to want to stay. And they're going to have to feed the players something. And it can't just be, you know, extra DLC content, blah, 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 blah. They're going to have to eat. I think that if they really want to instill confidence, they're going to have to eat the final shape. And the final shape is going to come in the form of eating crow. That's what it's going to have to be. They could do a CD Projekt Red, and they've gotten more money than God out of players so far. You want to really get some goodwill? You cut that cost for the final shape in half, right off rip. You cut it in half. And you work your asses off to make that as polished and as, my wife said, as polished and as perfect a DLC as you could possibly squeeze out. And you work overtime, you know what I mean? Like, you pay these people whatever they ask to continue to work with for you, and you make this the best thing ever and swan song it, because you're not going to get anything else out of players at this point. I think that the vast majority of players are thoroughly upset. They're only playing because they've spent so much money already. Their friends are still there. The servers are still online. I think dropping Marathon's probably not going to be an option for them, unfortunately, because Sony's pulling those strings. But I would say, you know, hey, we got to put Marathon on hold. That has to wait. We have to do what we can to rebuild player confidence in our brand name and to bring them to this console, because they're going to be pushing it primarily on the PlayStation. You have to work on building player confidence so that they come back, because otherwise they're going to see what happened to Destiny 2 and they'll be like, well, why would I buy Marathon? Why would I even put any money into it? I see what you guys do to people when you feel like you're losing. You don't cut salaries at the top to make up for the shortfall. You just fire a bunch of good people. I don't want to be a part of that. Gamers are starting to learn, especially after the last few years of scandals that we've seen throughout the gaming industry, especially when it comes to the sexual assault and the blackballing and blackmailing of employees to keep things hidden and under wraps. Gamers are learning to vote with their wallets, and employers of these companies are learning to speak up so that the gamers have that opportunity. And I think that that's a great thing. I think it's actually a little bit harsh for the players because they've fallen in love with it. But, I mean, it's not up to Bungie at this point. You know, the only way to save it is to literally put it back into the hands of the players fully. You know, you have to kowtow to whatever demands they make, and if you want to stay alive. Because Sony could very well turn the tables and just axe everybody at Bungie, and everybody's out of a job. Or they could piecemeal it out somehow. It's probably within their rights, somewhere buried into whatever contracts they've signed, that they could just chop Bungie up however way they want, and Bungie would fail, would cease to exist. So if Bungie wants to remain, they're going to have to really eat crow. And it's going to suck for them, but that's what they earned. Speaking about failures, and especially like travesties. Let's go to something that's actually truly tragic. In Florida news, some of you may have heard me talk about this story before, whether it's personally or through podcasting or through my stream. A young man by the name of Lakeon Woods was arrested in Florida. Initially, he was pulled over for a seatbelt violation. Later, after being incarcerated and charged formally, they have multiple drug-related offenses that were tacked onto his sentence. Part of this was predicated by apparently he was previously facing two probation violations that were attached to a 2018 homicide of one of his former roommates while he lived in Tallahassee. To what I can see, and I'm not 100% sure on this, so this is just what I've been able to discover so far, Mr. Woods was not actually convicted of this crime, but he apparently had violated some probationary measure where he's like, you're not in trouble for second-degree murder was the original charge. But you do have probation violations, which probably stemmed from, hey, you're not allowed to leave the state, not allowed to do this, that, go here, do that. Anyway, the police found him, caught him on this seatbelt violation, and of course he took off running because, you know, he had committed crimes and he was trying to not get caught by the police. However, when they caught him, the videos are out there. They're very disturbing, so just be warned that if you do decide to watch any of the videos regarding this incident, they're not very pleasant to watch. I wouldn't recommend that you do, but if you're curious and you want to see what I'm talking about, then you can absolutely find them. Lakeon Woods is spelled L-E-apostrophe-K-E-I-A-N, Woods, W-O-O-D-S. They savaged this man. Just short of turning him into another George Floyd or Philando Castile, they are caught on video punching and kneeing him in the back, shoulders, and face, most particularly, while he's on the ground. He has three officers with body armor and weapons all on him, and they keep yelling, stop resisting, but he clearly can't move. These guys probably outweigh him each by a good 60, maybe more pounds, including gear. And when they pick him up and they finally get photographs of him, you can't recognize his face. His eyes are completely swollen shut. It looks like he has two large plums where his eyes should be. His face is distorted. He was later reported as urinating blood and suffering other internal bleeding injuries. And he was denied treatment while he was being held, according to lawyers for his family. The thing that really blows my mind about this is we've seen how body camera footage can help stop crooked and, you know, hateful cops from, you know, abusing their authority and abusing their power. And my question is, if they had all this dirt on him, why were they letting him just run around and skate? They knew where he was. Why didn't they just raid his place? He's got these probation violations. You think that he's out here skating free on a second degree murder charge. Why didn't you just find where he was and take him down? You already had him in the vehicle. Follow him to where he was going and shake him down there. You know, you've had to find him somewhere. You had to follow him from somewhere. This beating feels like it's revenge or anger motivated. Like he either had a great lawyer that was able to get him out of it, or the prosecution maybe didn't have enough evidence to fully convict him of the crimes that he was accused of. And the police were frustrated with it. And they were like, well, we got him on this. So we're just going to, we're going to basically brutalize this young man. And I'm not here to speak to his guilt or innocence as to what he did, but this much brutality is disgusting. And the fact that the Department of Justice was called in to review this should have spoken more heavily to the Department of Justice than it did, because apparently, in their most recent ruling, the Duval County Sheriff's Office or Jacksonville Sheriff's Office didn't overstep their bounds in basically brutalizing this man within an inch of his life. But it doesn't really shock me when it comes to Jacksonville police, in particular Duval County. Their record of shooting and abusing people in police custody or suspects is pretty long and storied. It's a very sad mark on the history of Jacksonville. And it really does put no faith in the policing abilities of the department. And Sheriff T.K. Waters, by the way, that guy is out and out a bootlicker for the Jacksonville government, especially the right wings of the Jacksonville government and the law enforcement community at large. I don't care what people think about what I'm saying here. I believe that to be the case. That's just my personal opinion, obviously, but I find everything about the man to be very much like he's a puppet and he's a prop to make it look like, hey, we're progressive. We hired one of them to be our sheriff. And I think that it's a really weak stance to put on, and it's a really politically driven and it's a platitude to social groups and to the community as a whole to have him there. I honestly think he should be fired. I don't think he should have ever gotten the job in the first place. And I think that the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office needs to be gutted from the top down. But who's going to do it? Apparently not the Department of Justice. So much for that, right? The only thing I can hope is that, you know, whatever Lakeon Woods has done in his past, that he does make restitution for, however that has to shape up. But then on top of that, that his family and his lawyers go to the city of Jacksonville for all the medical bills that they definitely are going to have and sue this city for what they can get, and then beat feet. Go somewhere else, take your money and live a better life. That would be my suggestion. I mean, I can't say that you're guilty or innocent because I don't know. I wasn't there. But if you're even guilty of a third of what you've been accused of, take this money and find something else that you love to do and don't do crime. But leave Jacksonville, because I know that this might sound bad, but I guarantee you, whatever it was that you were into, it wasn't worth anything that happened to you. And you didn't deserve that. No matter what everybody else might think, no matter how the law might lay it out, you didn't deserve to be beaten and brutalized like a wild animal in the streets. Nobody deserved that. That's just disgusting and reprehensible. Anyway, since we're in the news portion, we're finding out that despite all of his legal woes, the grand old Cheeto, Donald Trump, is still leading the Republican nomination for 2024 for the presidency of the United States. I think at this point, the fact that he's outstripping Ron DeSantis by nearly 40 poll points, just about anywhere you look, just speaks volumes to how much people just want to live in this cult of personality of Donald Trump. I don't know why. I don't know who was still asleep during Trump's presidency and how they've seen how everybody's been trying to fight to undo all the mess and the debacle he left for the Biden-Harris presidency. I don't know. I can't say. I think you're either asleep or you're just a horrible person. Those are the two options that come to mind. And DeSantis is no better. As a matter of fact, he might actually be worse because, one, he's clever. And that's very scary when you have somebody who's also, two, just a horrible, horrible human being. We've spoken about this on the podcast before. Just the idea that slavery somehow benefited African Americans throughout history by giving them viable skills in the workplace. Fuck that guy in particular. Okay. Ron DeSantis is evil. He's a bigot. He's a misogynist. And he's definitely bad news for the LGBTQIA plus community at large. And he should have been somehow censured. I don't know how you'd go about removing a governor legally, but just the very simple fact that he seems to be brutalizing and bullying the population of Florida should have been enough for somebody somewhere somehow to enact some kind of litigation against him. I mean, he went after Disney for crying out loud. Really? Like, this guy's got a big brass set. Doesn't necessarily mean that he's got a great brain. And as much as I don't want to see Donald Trump back in office again, I definitely don't want to see DeSantis either. The real problem, I think, is that, you know, Trump in particular is polling higher with older voters, which make up a pretty fair portion of, you know, the majority of these states that he's polling highest in, especially some of the battleground states that previously were won by Joe Biden. DeSantis scores higher with younger people, which is really scary to me. That means that there's an entire generation of people who are under the age of 40, 50 that are like, we want that to be our guy. That's terrifying to me. That's in my age bracket. And that means that people in my generation and younger still don't get how dangerous this human being is. People are actually quoted as saying that they believe, this was through a poll that I watched earlier today on the news through Fox News 30 here in Jacksonville, that people believe that the Israel-Palestine conflict will end if Trump comes back into office. And I think that it'll probably end before then, but I don't think Trump would do anything to help it. If he could have started right now, if he could have started taking over things today, I think he would do next to nothing to help. And it's just crazy to even think that. But Biden polls terribly, even amongst Democrats, because nobody wants him. I mean, they've seen the ravages of time have taken their toll on Joe. He's a much older man. It's political death for the Democratic Party to continue to hold on to him. Independents haven't offered a better solution, nor the Libertarian parties or anybody else. Shit, even the Green Party can't come up with something. You'd think they'd be able to dust somebody off and throw him in front, right? We just need somebody who's, one, not a sexagenarian, two, can speak reasonably well, three, who has broad-reaching appeal, and four, who's willing to work with a bipartisan coalition to make the country a better place, to stop some of the bleed-off that we have in our economy, to put an end to our frivolous spending on wars and defense of other countries, and maybe inject more back into the American economy, into business and infrastructure, into manufacturing, into just the people's pockets. You don't need to do a stimulus package or anything like that either. You know what I mean? Maybe what we do is, instead of throwing the taxes on everybody, maybe we do this. This is a novel idea. Wait for me here. Maybe we start taxing billionaires, corporations, and churches. Just saying. If you're able to influence the political process by using your influence in any way, shape, or form, and you're one of those three entities, you should be paying taxes. I know people's like, you know, this is supposed to be a separation of church and state, but is there? Have you been watching what's been going on, especially with the evangelical right over the last few years? How adamantly evangelical rights and also MAGA Republicans have fought against almost every single civil rights issue that's come across their tables? If you don't see that there's no separation between church and state already, you are absolutely blind. I just don't see how a rational human being can think that in the moment, you know, for even a moment, I mean. Despite the fact that a large group of people, including and especially particularly Democrats, are showing that they have no faith in Joe Biden's ability to lead, especially not for another four more years, the Democratic Party still seems to want to put other eggs in that very rickety basket. Let Joe rest. God bless. There's got to be some. Grab Pete Buttigieg. You know what? Put Harris back up. Put Harris back up for the nomination. You know what I mean? Say, hey, Joe's taking a knee. We're going to put Buttigieg and Harris. You know what I mean? Like, there are any number of people. Get Andrew Yang. Find him. He was great. I would have loved to have had Andrew Yang. Get him. Andrew Yang and Buttigieg, or Andrew Yang and Harris, or any combination of those three. I mean, fuck, there's got to be somebody better than Biden. There has to be. It's mind-boggling to think that there wouldn't even be another option out there. That's staggering to me. I don't get that at all. Speaking of the whole idea of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, in recent news, the Israeli bombing of the Gaza Strip is getting a lot more attention and scrutiny across the world and through other news agencies, because several strikes have actually missed or been misdirected from what they were supposedly tactical strikes, and have hit residential areas and refugee camps. Now, some of these numbers are coming from the Hamas-run health ministry, so we can't necessarily verify their entire veracity. But according to their estimates, upwards of 10,000 civilians are dead just because of these most recent raids and bombing campaigns. The only answer I have is just stop. Just stop. Go for an annexation of the former Palestinian state and just call it done. Give them what they want and they will go away. This is a stupid, stupid problem to have, but it's still a problem because people are still dying. And it's not necessarily all of Hamas. You know how you can tell? Because if you got all of Hamas, the attacks by Hamas would stop. But they're not. And if the argument is, well, you know, maybe they're hiding amongst, you know, the citizenry. So your answer is basically a carpet bombing campaign, which would amount to genocide. How can that be the policy going forward when it comes to dealing with this issue. I don't have a degree in political science. You know what I mean? I'm not a general. I have no other strategy, you know, and I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm not a captain of industry. I'm just a person who goes, do we want to see people getting dragged out in pieces from under rubble? Children with missing eyes and legs? You know what I mean? What does it fucking have to take for you animals to stop this shit? If you give the Palestinians their state, which is what they want, the only reason they've latched onto Hamas is because Hamas seems to want to fight for them. But when they get what they want, how much longer are they going to want to have the bombings continue? How much longer are they going to be like, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's keep them around. Nothing like a shelling every Tuesday at noon. Eventually, they're going to go like, you know what? If you take a more compassionate and compensatory action towards this situation, as opposed to these punitive and violent attacks against the people, because you're not getting Hamas. Let's just be honest about it. You're not. Your idea is the same idea that they used in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, I think it was. It's like, you know, fire the art, have the archers fire. It's like, our men are down there. It's like, yeah, but we'll get some of theirs as well. Are you fucking serious? That's your strategy? That's your policy? It's asinine. I think the only, and we got to stop sending money, weapons, and resources for war anywhere, no matter where it is. The longer America and Americans continue to want to feed these kinds of conflicts, the longer they continue. And I know that war is big business, but you know what else could be big business? Industry. Bring back factories to the United States. You want to make jobs? Make fucking jobs. You know, build our cars and stuff here. Stop relying on cheap foreign labor. And here's another thing. Start taxing CEOs and corporations for what they owe. Have them carry some of the weight. A little bit of social accountability is a necessary measure. It's not socialism because they still can make the money. What it is you're paying your share. You're carrying your weight. They're not. They're leaning on the American people and they're bleeding everyone dry. And they get to do it because they put money in the pockets of politicians and banks. And if they're doing these handshake deals, they're not looking out for the common person. I mean, the strikes recently haven't shown you that enough. What kind of degree do you have to see that? Because I don't have one. But I can tell that people are displeased, they're upset, they're feeling disenfranchised. And if you want to keep them happier, the way to do it is not to drain their pockets and make them feel financially and emotionally and physically insecure. I don't know who's against the idea of, you know, a tax-funded healthcare system that we can all apply, you know, we can all use. It's working in hundreds of other countries around the world. Canada even has this going on right now. People leave America to go to Canada and they'll stay because, you know, if I apply for Canadian citizenship and get a job here, I can get better healthcare than I could in America, you know, working for more money. I don't get who's not getting this. God forbid somebody actually has this platform and tries to run. They would probably crucify them in the streets. But the truth is, this is what would work. It would endear the American people towards them on both sides of the aisle. People want jobs. People want security for themselves and their family. People don't want to be spending their tax dollars spent on wars. They'd rather have better roads, better schools, healthcare, and education. It seems pretty simple. It seems pretty basic. Yet and still, this culture war that exists within our political cadre is ripping this country apart at the seams, and no one seems to be poised to stop it. All you can do is just watch it fall to pieces or pack your shit and leave. America is not the greatest country in the world. We've all heard that little line, you know, and it really isn't. I don't think there's any real way to make America great again because America never has truly been great. It's been okay and maybe okay-ish to some degree. It's been better for a lot of people in some ways. It's better, worse for a lot of others. It's never been great. It's been good at the best, but it has never been great. And it seems like it's pretty simple to look at it and go, These are the things that people want. If we give them to the people, they will vote for us, and they will be, you know, we will be able to, you know, exercise, you know, their will, and, you know, we can renew faith in American government and in America as a country. That's just how I see it. I mean, I could be wrong, but what's happening right now ain't working. So, I mean, could we try it? Let's try that. Let's try that for 8 years. Oh, wait, we did. There's this guy. His name was Obama, right? Yeah. And things actually were starting to turn around and get better during those 8 years after years and years and years of ruin. And now he came in and started doing better. And then we elected the Cheeto and everything went right back down the shitter again. I don't understand how Republicans can claim to love the country so much and still do so much irreparable harm to the people and the country itself. Anyway, shake off the bad vibes. Let's go into something that's equally horrible. Gridiron gripes. Oh, fuck. Let's do the win-loss. Here we go. Wonder of wonders, Chicago managed to lose again to New Orleans, 17-24. I'm glad I didn't see the game. I saw highlights and I was like, it's all New Orleans. I knew it. I'm disappointed in Chicago, but at this point, I'm kind of like, whatever, it's going to happen. What are you going to do about it? However, the Pittsburgh Steelers did take it to the Titans and pull out a 20-16 win. I did get to see a good chunk of that game, and Pittsburgh looked really sharp. I remember saying that the Steelers were going to be, the Steelers-Titans game was going to be a close one. It was going to be a shootout, and boy, was it ever. Great play on both sides of the ball. A couple of, you know, obviously you're going to get a couple of those weird calls that you're like, that shouldn't have been that. That could have been this. But both teams managed to keep everything out on the field. You know, although the Steelers do run up a lot of penalties and that's probably cost them points that they could have had, they still managed to play a solid game nonetheless. And congratulations to the Pittsburgh Steelers for actually doing their best to keep the Titans under wraps. And also to New Orleans for slapping Chicago down, because I think they needed it. I think that the more Chicago gets beat down, the more the fan base starts to feel the burn. Eventually, somebody in that head office is going to be like, somebody in that organization is going to be like, we got to get rid of whoever's making us like shut down all of our attempts to build a stronger offense and to beef up our defense better, and to find like good coaching staff and to build around a couple of decent quarterbacks and especially a strong offensive line. Defense has always been pretty solid for Chicago, but their offensive line is garbage and it needs to shift. Otherwise, they're just going to fall back even further than they have. I don't know what else to say about that. However, the upcoming predictions are on the way because Chicago's facing off against Carolina. Pittsburgh is going to be heading up against Green Bay, and the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to take on the San Francisco 49ers. First, personally for me, I'm taking all of my teams just because I believe that Pittsburgh can actually do well against Green Bay. I know it'll be a little bit of an uphill battle, but I think that Pittsburgh has a solid enough core of players that are still healthy and still productive that they can take Green Bay down. Jacksonville is really starting to come into their own. They look great. They are learning how to manage their energy on both sides of the halftime mark. Their overall offense is still a little shaky, but their defense is actually picking up and holding other offenses down, which is great to see. It's huge improvement over the last few years. And Chicago, only reason I'm picking them is because they got to win sometime, right? Just on the just out of the averages, right? Like but mathematically speaking, if we were just flipping coins, they should have won more than they've won so far. You know what I mean? It's just an embarrassment. There's nowhere else to go but up. I mean, for them, Pittsburgh's been solid for their last few showings, so I can't really say anything about them. But yeah, they really need to snap it up. And Jacksonville's climbing confidence is absolutely wonderful to see. It's a great day to be a Jacksonville Jaguar, they say, and it really is. Jacksonville Jaguars as a team and the city as fans, they should be very proud of their team. The guys are turning the corner. I think they're going to improve continually through the rest of the season. And while I can't say that I expect to see them in a conference championship, I wouldn't entirely rule it out. Let's keep our fingers crossed for them. Good luck to everybody this week, and let's see how right or wrong I am come next episode. In the social news, you know, there's a thing that's been traveling around about bad first dates to take people on. I know I've probably hinted at this in previous podcasts, but I definitely want to talk to this. I kind of lose track of what I said, when and where, even though I have it scripted. I go back and look. I didn't mention it there, did I? Or did I slip it in? I don't think so. But anyway, this list of bad first dates has been cycling the internet lately. And it started out with some kind of what I believe to be a scripted video of a woman who's on a date with a man, and he brings her to the Cheesecake Factory. And I heard it said when he gets out, he gets to the restaurant, he gets out and goes to open her door for her. You know what I mean? It was a, who does that? It's really cool that he did it, but I mean, you don't see that very often anymore. But when he got out to go and unlock get her out of the car, open her door for her, she locked the door on him in his own car, which, first of all, I have the keys in my pocket. I'm putting my hand on a thing. I'm opening it up. And I'm like, what is your fucking problem? When she finally does deign to talk to him, she says that she's too good for Cheesecake Factory. I've seen the video, honey. No, you're not. No, you're not. You are not an unlovely woman. I wouldn't say that at all. But, I mean, dude didn't take Beyonce to Cheesecake Factory. He took your ass. Get your ass out of the car. Be grateful for the free meal. And just, suck it up. Maybe it's not your vibe, but don't be ungrateful. And don't be shitty about it. And then they went to go and further discuss it throughout the video. He kind of just goes like, well, you too good for Cheesecake Factory. You too good for this date. Deuces. And just, and that's the end. But yeah, I looked at that list and I'm looking at it. And I'm like, a lot of this stuff doesn't seem so off the mark. Some of it seems wild. Some of it absolutely seems wild. But some of it seems like, it actually make for a fairly decent first date. I mean, it might not be the greatest first date you've ever had, but it would be at least decent. Couple things. We'll hit the first points that are like, absolutely not. Never take a first date to a church meeting. Or a church service or a family gathering. Not ever. Not ever. It's way too aggressive, way too aspirational. And my thing is, if somebody wanted me to just go to church with them on the first date we're having, I'm going to assume that they're going to make me a sacrifice. Like, who takes their first date to church? I'm all for you, having, religious aspirations that line up alongside one another, but the first date? The first date's a real ask. And taking them to the family, I saw part of Get Out and I couldn't watch any more of it. It was all I could think of after that. It was like, and he had been dating that girl for a while. And then you finally go to meet her family and they like, oh, all this shit happens? Nah. If that's our first date, come meet my mom and dad. I'm like, oh, you know what? Man, I gotta wash my hair for the next month. I can't do that. The real joke here is that I'm bald, so unless I'm talking about washing my arm or leg hair, yeah, I'm on some bullshit. I don't want to do that. That's a ridiculous request. The other ones were just benign. They weren't necessarily great, but they were benign. Like they were saying bars or going taking someone to a bar for drinks or to a sporting event or to a chain restaurant like a Cheesecake Factory. Some of the ones that were named were Cheesecake Factory, Chili's, Applebee's, Buffalo Wild Wings. I'm like, okay. There could be a line that you can draw there. Maybe the person doesn't drink. Okay, well, the bar's not a great choice. A sporting event, maybe. If you guys like sports, you maybe like the same team. Like, I mean, if I were dating in this scenario and I knew somebody was a Jacksonville Jaguars fan, and I'm like, hey, I got tickets to the game. I thought maybe we could go check it out. Maybe pay a little bit extra, upgrade to a box seat. Like, yeah, that's pretty nice, right? I mean, you won't be doing this shit every weekend, but I mean, pretty cool to go on a first date, sit in the box and be able to watch the game, experience a little bit of the sights and sounds because you can still walk down towards the field, get yourself a couple of, beers and dogs or whatever and still talk. There's a limit. You have a common interest that, you can share when it comes to those kinds of places. Great. But a lot of those places are sit-down places, just kind of open for conversation to a certain degree. But you don't want to make that the entire date. You know what I mean? Start there and then go somewhere else. Do something else. Expand on what you find in common with one another and then move on from there. Have a couple of ideas maybe that you could put in your back pocket. Talking to the wife, and one of them was listed a buffet. And she's like, I honestly wouldn't be offended if somebody took me to a buffet. It's hard to pick out what somebody likes, doesn't like, can or can't eat. But if you take them to a buffet, there's a myriad of options for them to choose from. It's financially responsible, but it's not necessarily cheap. But then again, if you're not failing it there, we can always, you know, we can pack up and move and go somewhere else. No one's going to say like, hey, man, you know, you paid for this buffet. Why are you leaving early? Like, I'm done. It's not like a sit down restaurant where you pay, you eat part of the meal and you just walk out. You're like, what happened? Was it bad? There's no embarrassment there. You can be like, oh, we're just not feeling this place. We out. Personal best dates that I was looking at on the list were some of the ones that were listed were just dumb in my personal opinion, but it was the kind of dates that I found to be the most successful when I was dating. Taking someone to a coffee shop, you know, little bookstore, a public park, like a museum, something where you're out in the open in public during the day. There's no real expectation for either one of you to go back to one another's place, which was one of the things on the list, which was wild to me. The first time I meet you, I want you to come to my house. Why? So you can hang me upside down by my ankles in your basement? Fuck no. Absolutely not. So yeah, a coffee shop. Nice, you know, innocuous space during the daytime. Hey, can we meet up in the afternoon? You know, early afternoon. Say like, hey, we meet around 2, 3, 4 o'clock. Grab a cup of coffee, grab some tea, you know, scone, biscuit, bagel, whatever. Sit and talk, go to a bookshop. Hey, let's just browse through books. What are your favorite books? What kind of subjects are you into? Oh, are you, and you get to find out like, hey, maybe you're into computer programming. Oh, I didn't know that that was a thing. Oh yeah, it's I do this, but I'm also into that. Or actually I'm a programmer by trade and blah, 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 blah. You get to learn about the person. You know, a public park. What are you going to do in a public park? Probably sit down. Maybe you prepared a little snack tray or something like that. And sit down, walk around, look at flowers, look at trees, people watch, you know, museum, check out art. You know what I mean? Listen to like the music that's playing in there. Get a feel for how the person reacts in those scenarios. And then it's an easy, low risk date. You know what I mean? It's not cheap, not necessarily, but it's not super pricey unless you want it to be. It can go either way. Like I said, great conversation topics, people watching, but also it's an easy out and an easy in. So if you're like, not really feeling this, you know, it's a coffee shop. You didn't drop, you know, $600 at Nobu. You spent maybe like 30, 40 bucks at the most. If you're really spending out. All right. Well, this just didn't work out. Thanks a lot. It was great. Maybe we'll talk later. If you're like, hey, we're really vibing right now. Why don't you say we talked about blah, blah, blah. There's such and such right around the corner or just a block or two away. Let's go check that out. Now you're building a rapport. You're learning about one another. I think that when they came up with that list, it was really just more of a culture kind of thing. It's like I don't know how to really put it. It's like a class signaling kind of thing. Like, I want someone who makes this much money and could treat me like this and do this. Well, what do you bring to the table? You know what I mean? That's also another thing. You might call me cheap, but I always thought this was a good idea. Go Dutch on your first date. I know it's the aspirational thing to do to want to pay for a first date, but honestly, in my experience, just watching other people over the last like 5, 6, 7, 8 years, people don't really know how to interact with one another very often when it comes to a social setting. So yeah, why blow your entire, you know, why blow a chunk of your paycheck on somebody who may or may not be staring at their fucking phone the entire time? It would not be me. I would say if that's the case, you know, hey, you seemed more interested in staring at the people inside your little thinky box than the person who paid money to come out and hang out with you. How about you go talk to them? I'm going to go to the bar down the street and maybe watch the game. Deuces. You know, it's an easy out. And we are coming up to the holidays. So here's a couple of things. And we were talking about Friendsgiving with my friends group. And some people do, some people don't. Some people say it's a yes, some people say it's a no. I think it's a great idea for getting your friends together, but it can be a fucking pain to organize. One of the biggest reasons is because if you're doing a Friendsgiving, the general, when it first really became to be a thing, I was much younger, and it was generally done with like college age kids. You know what I mean? Maybe you met together at school, maybe you were just coming in, you're in or just coming out of college. Your families were further away, so you'd get together with one another so you didn't have to spend the money to travel, and you would just hang out and kick it. That's cool. Usually what would happen in that case is everybody would decide we're going to make this big meal together. But now, I mean, I'm a little older, and so are my friends, and so it feels like, man, trying to find who's allergic to this, who can eat that, who won't eat this, who wants that. it just can be a real big ordeal. I don't think that it's impossible to do, but I think that it's just, know that it's going to be a really serious effort. I feel like the holidays are, generally speaking, for family and your really, really close friends, like people you've known for decades, you know. It's a great idea. Friendsgiving is a great idea for single people or college students or people who don't have any close family nearby, and they kind of bond together and form their own pseudo family. But Friendsgivings can be a little bit more difficult when everybody has relatives or such and such that are in their area or maybe even further away, and they want to go and be with them during these holidays, because now you're adding an extra day for them to travel. If I was going to travel to go visit, you know, let's say my family in Chicago for Thanksgiving, but then the week or two before that, I have to plan for another get together here in my hometown, that's a lot to ask of people. So, I mean, I think that that can work, but just know that it's going to be a little bit of a trial. As far as, like, you know, the holidays, I mean, there are going to be parties coming up, right? And the Friendsgiving is one of them. Also, you know, family gatherings, just holiday etiquette, right? If you're doing like a family gathering or a Friendsgiving or a Christmas party or whatever, bring, or at least offer to bring, a snack, a beverage, a side dish. You know what I mean? Hey, do you guys need anything? You know, should I bring, like, you know, a couple of cases of soda and some ice? Can I bring, like, you know, a potato salad or whatever? That's cool. You know, something simple, but something that's still going to benefit everyone. Please, for the love of God, do not experiment during this time, though. If you haven't made the dish before with any confidence, do not try some new shit on people and spring it on them during their party. That's number one. Like, offer to bring something. Offer to bring something that will, like, help enhance the party, but don't play around. Stick with what you know. Keep it simple. Here's another one. Number two, I'll go with. We'll say it's number two. If you're going to drive, ask your people about parking when you get to their place, or carpooling with other, you know, people who are invited. You know, this way you don't clog up somebody's parking lot or their entire street with vehicles. That's a great thing to do, especially if you live in an apartment. If you live in a small development, you know, maybe you're friends with people who, like, live in, like, a very small housing development, you know, or they, maybe they live on a main street and there wouldn't be a lot of street parking. It's a great idea. And when you do so, just arrive on time. Do not show up early. Showing up early, especially when you're bringing a group of people, or maybe it's you and your plus one or whatever, that showing up early puts a lot of undue stress on the hosts who are trying to prepare everything for you guys to get there. You want to give them a minute to get everything together and then be able to relax for a little bit before the rush comes. So don't arrive early, but do arrive on time and give them adequate time to prepare and not have to negotiate your parking situation. Ask about that stuff first. Third, don't overeat or overdrink, because nobody wants to babysit a grown-ass adult during a holiday gathering. Not once, not never, not ever. Everybody's been to a holiday back in the day with their kids, you know, with their friends or family when they were younger, when they were kids, and they've had that one drunk uncle or that one auntie who has too many rosés, and now we can't get Aunt Debbie to stop talking shit about everybody in the family. You know, the uncle's peeing in the front yard or something like that. Like, you know, or their dad's yelling at their mom in the kitchen. Yeah, no, don't overindulge. Just get a little bit of everything if you can, or if you want to. Take your time, pace yourself. Don't go bananas. And if you're going to be drinking, this is an easy one because it's number four. Have a designated driver, or even if you're not, just have a good exit plan. This is just good common sense and manners, right? Like, you definitely don't want to overstay your welcome, but you don't want to leave half an hour into the function. And you definitely don't want to be the one that gets hammered and then they have to take your keys and pin you down and make you sleep on the couch or in the basement or something like that because they can't be trusted to drive. Don't do that. Number five, this is a good one. And I think that this is one that people don't think about enough because everybody's been to a family gathering where you're like, ooh, that was delicious. I would like some more, but I really can't eat too much right now. But if you don't mind, I'd like to take some. Bring your own Tupperware. This might not seem like a real big thing. In our house, we provide a lot of Tupperware just because we know that it happens. But bringing your own Tupperware is such a cool move because, you know, at a certain point, people might run out and they might want to give you something, but then they're giving you their own dishes. And nobody wants to chase down dishes, especially during the holiday season. You might need that for your leftovers. You might need that for your regular food when you're tired of eating, you know, turkey drumsticks and dressing and cranberry sauce. You might want to make yourself, I don't know, a fucking egg salad sandwich and all your Tupperware is gone because so-and-so couldn't be bothered to bring like a small little Tupperware. Bring two decent sized Tupperwares with you so you can take a little to-go plate or whatever with you. That's not going to kill you. And it's also a really cool thing to do because then the people feel like, oh, that's awesome. You liked my food enough that you wanted some. And you also made sure, like, hey, I knew I was going to like this. I'm definitely taking some home, but I don't want to tax you and say at the same time. Number six is a great one. Ask about allergies. Oh, God, I learned this the hard way on accident. As you guys probably recall from previous episodes, I have gluten and lactose issues. Now, outside of that, I don't really have many food-based allergies or anything like that. It's just, you know, gluten and lactose. That's it. I mean, it's still a lot, but at the same time, I can negotiate around most of those. One thing I forgot to take into account was that some people have nut allergies, and some of the lactose-free things that I would eat or, you know, consume were based in, like, cashew milk or almond milk. And one year, I made this dish, which was apparently really good. Well, one of the kids had an allergy that I didn't even think to ask about and had to end up force-feeding Benadryl because we didn't want to take somebody to the hospital. So ask about allergies. Always ask about food or drink allergies, please. Just for your peace of mind, and so you don't have to send somebody to the hospital during the holidays, just ask. Super simple. Number seven, never, ever bring an unexpected, uninvited, or unwelcome guest to any function ever. Nothing will turn an entire fun-filled day of fellowship and food and fun, you know, just like into a downright debacle like bringing fucking Steve. You know what I mean? You know everybody hates Steve, but you just had to bring Steve, didn't you? Like, who did you want to see go to jail today? Like, why? Just leave fucking Steve at home, all right? Let Steve figure out his own shit. Fuck Steve. If he wanted to get invited, he should have been a better person. You know what I mean? Like, definitely don't spring extra people on your hosts. Because now you've put them at a disadvantage because they provided for a certain number of people and now they're ass out because you decided you were going to do something unilaterally on your own. Never do that to anyone. Also, this is number eight. This is a great one though. Never make a big announcement during somebody else's event. I don't care how excited you are, how swept up you are in the emotions and pageantry of the holidays. Do not get engaged. Do not start a relationship during the holiday season. It is a hallmark for a disastrous end. And it also steals all the thunder from what should be a fun event now you've made it all about you. Don't do that. This is supposed to be a gathering for everyone. You want to have your day? You pick a day somewhere else and you make your own day. Don't do that during somebody else's event. That's just super tacky, really trashy, and it smacks of selfishness. You won't get invited back again if it's me. I promise you that. Come to my Christmas party and decide you're going to announce your engagement during my Christmas party. Hey, that's great. Get the fuck out. Since y'all are so in love, y'all go find somewhere else to be happy and in love. We ain't come here for all that shit. Now you turn this whole thing into your day? Nah. You just got free catering is what you did. It's a shitty way to do it, too. Number nine. Some of you might give gifts during your holiday parties. If you have a work party or you have a Christmas party with friends, do not exceed any preset gift spending limits. No need to ball out of control. Don't try to floss right now. Don't flex on everybody else and make everybody else feel other people feel bad because you decide to go above and beyond for your gift. All you're doing is embarrassing everybody else and also yourself. Don't do that. Just be mindful of that. And number 10, which kind of really wraps up everything in a tight, neat little bow, be safe, be smart, and be mindful. Do not let the holidays be your reason that somebody else starts to hate or dread this season. No one should have to have any more memories than they probably already have of ruined Christmas parties or bad Thanksgiving blowouts, you know, a Christmas day where somebody does something ridiculous and now everybody has to turn their entire plans upside down. Just take some time, exercise a little bit of compassion and a lot of common sense. And make sure you have a happy, safe, and, you know, mindful holiday season, whatever it is you do, wherever you do it, with whomever you do it. I think that's going to wrap it for this one, guys. It's been a little bit longer than the usual, but again, thank you to everybody for tuning in and listening to the Wandering One podcast. I sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. Whether you've been able to support it through Patreon or not, whether you've been able to listen to every episode or not, hell, if this is your first one, welcome. Thank you so much. And you know, whoever's been able to just click the share button and send it to your social media circles, who's ever, you know, sent it in a text to a friend or a coworker, I just want you to know that I appreciate you. Whatever you do, however you can do it, thank you, thank you, thank you. Again, to close it off, patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. If you want to support for just $5 a month, you gain access to 2 dedicated episodes exclusively for Patreon supporters. So please feel free to do that if you can. Do not hurt yourself or anybody else. Break your bank. I know it seems like it's just $5, but yeah, but $5 is $5. Gas ain't cheap anymore, okay? Be mindful about your finances. I don't want anybody to hurt themselves. You can also check me out on twitch.tv/linkib, where I do gaming content 4 days a week, as well as some of this chatty kind of stuff with the community as well. I would love it if you guys popped in. That'd be awesome. Streamlabs.com/linkib/merch. If you feel like you can afford to and want to, pop in the store. See if there's something you like. Maybe it'll make a nice holiday gift for somebody else. Maybe a gift for yourself. Either way, I appreciate everything that you do. Wherever you see this, whenever you see this, don't hesitate to rate, comment, but most of all, share the podcast with people. It helps it grow. And pretty soon, I think if I can get things moving, we might be looking at a way to, oh boy, get some, I know you're going to hate this, but sponsored ad reads. It would be great to be able to be sponsored to do this and to be able to provide a better level of content for everyone. Hell, maybe even find somebody who can teach me how to edit and add music and all kinds of other cool stuff to these podcasts later down the line. That's going to do it for me. I'm your host, Link Flores. This has been the Wandering One podcast. I appreciate you. I love you. Have a wonderful day, and I'll see you a little bit farther on down the road. Take care, guys. Until next time.